Gang, we all know that a premium Spotify subscription gives you access to millions of songs and thousands of podcasts, but did you know that a premium Spotify subscription also gets you access to tons of audiobooks for free? It does, gang. Listen to great books like Storyteller, the Dave Grohl memoir, or Life by Keith Richards, or The Woman in Me by Britney Spears. Listen, there's all kinds of books on there. There's fiction, nonfiction, self-help, anything you're looking for, man, they got it, and you can listen to it for free. Just go to Spotify.com or download Spotify from your app store and start listening today. That's Spotify. Millions of songs, thousands of podcasts, and now audiobooks available with your premium subscription. Spotify.com. Let's get down. What are they saying on How Did I Get Here?
I can fit in anywhere. I mean, really, I feel like if there's people in front of me, they're going to like it.
And you're like, why am I here? What is my purpose?
But yes, we have long hair. Yes, yeah. We smoke pot. But we love this music.
The thing was, it was the song.
I do say that.
You do?
Yeah.
With that attitude?
Yeah.
The minute things get uncomfortable, if I can walk away, I will.
Now the most important thing to me are my friendships that I've made and continue to make in this business.
It's just you feel so small and insignificant.
What do we define as a professional musician?
I could just be playing Tibetan bowls with like random chanting lyrics.
I think some switch had been flipped in me at that point where it was like I was never going back.
A naughty nurse, I had Dominique the Dominatrix. You know, these characters made me a lot of money.
Oh, I'm standing up in front of a room full of people demanding that they pay attention to me. Like, if I deconstruct this away from music, it's kind of a weird thing to do, to stand up and be like, hey, everybody, just shut up and listen to what I have to say.
Yeah. That's How Did I Get Here with me, Johnny Gowdy. Find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Let's get down. Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys have all had a good week, whatever it is you did this week. I want to thank you guys for all the feedback I got on Tuesday's show with Mike McGuff, the writer, producer, and director of Runaway Radio, the rise and fall of KLOL-FM, the station 101 KLOL-FM in Houston. That was around from 1970 to 2004. I talked to the director and producer, if you didn't hear the show, and writer of that documentary, Runaway Radio, about radio, about 101, about my specific connection to 101. And there was so much great feedback. It turns out that a lot of people that listen to this show have somehow lived in Houston or hung out a lot of time in Houston while 101 was a strong station. Or, you know, honestly, I got some feedback about, one guy wrote about a station called The Buzzard in Cleveland that sort of suffered the same fate. And the point of the story is that these stations all sort of like came up in the era when FM radio was a new thing and they were kind of inventing their format. And basically what it was album-oriented radio, AOR radio, which we heard later, became a format later. But these people were inventing it in the early 70s, basically playing whatever they wanted to. You can think about it as like WKRP in Cincinnati, like guys that are like, oh, here's the, you know, Miles Davis from Bitches Brew, and here's, you know, the Jimi Hendrix Experience, and here's the latest Lynyrd Skynyrd. Like, they're just playing basically whatever. And what ended up happening was there was a Telecommunications Act that was passed in 1996 under Bill Clinton, which deregulated radio ownership, because in markets, you could only own two radio stations. And then he made it so that people could own multiple radio stations in markets. And so these giant, huge, multinational conglomerate corporations came in and took over radio and took the personality out. And most of these, like 101, really reflected, KLOL reflected Houston. It was a reflection of Houston as a city and the people that lived there. And the DJs that were on the radio were part of your life, like you knew their names and all that stuff. That stuff's gone. These are robot radio stations playing programmed music that has been tested in small little markets to see what songs play or don't. Nobody takes a risk. Nobody plays something because they like it anymore. And I'm not like get off my lawn about it, but it is something that is missed in culture. Now in Austin, it's a little bit of a different story because Austin is a little different. We have KUTX, which is a radio station that is extremely local. They play national music and all that stuff. Same thing with Sun Radio, but it's part of our community. You know these people's names. You know what time they're on. You know what I mean? They'll tell you what the big concert is to go to this weekend. All that kind of stuff. If you need to wear a coat tomorrow because of the weather or the news, all that stuff, you know, you become dependent on these people. You get a connection with these people. You get a connection with these radio stations. And basically what happened was with the nationalization of these playlists and robot sort of radio stations that don't have personality driven shows, they just kind of like they lose their connection with the community, and the radio station is no longer part of your daily life. You know what I mean? So anyway, it was a great episode. The documentary Runaway Radio, you can rent it wherever you rent movies, be it Amazon, anywhere you do video on demand. And our conversation is on the last episode, which I believe is 1379. Yeah, Runaway Radio. Anyway, it was a great conversation. Mike is a great guy. He did a great job with this movie. You know, we had a great conversation right down to how he got the celebrities like Sammy Hagar, Melissa Etheridge, I love it, all these people to come in and talk about the importance of KOL to their careers. And people like Lyle Lovett, he grew up on it. So anyway, check it out, Runaway Radio, and check out my conversation with Michael Guff, the writer, director, producer. Gang, I have a great show for you guys today. Dallas-based singer-songwriter Stephanie Sammons is my guest on the show today. She has a brand new record coming out next week, May 3rd. It's called Time and Evolution. This is her debut LP. She's put out a couple of EPs before, but this is her debut LP, and she recorded it in Nashville with the great producer Mary Bragg, who you might remember produced the Grace Pettis album and also the Natalie Price album that came out. Mary Bragg's a fantastic producer. Stephanie Sammons is a great songwriter. Now, she lives in Dallas part of the time, and she lives in Nashville the other part of the time. She has a day job in Dallas as a financial planner for LGBTQ plus over 50 people in Dallas. So that's what she does there, but she's also a fantastic songwriter. She studied songwriting under like Mary Gaucher, Emily Saylors, Beth Nielsen Chapman, Jonathan Brooks, Susie Bogus, Verlin Thompson, Gretchen Peters, and that song, you know, all of that has contributed to her songwriting evolving, you know, into this great thing. Like she's a great, great songwriter. And we have a really great conversation about how she splits her time in Nashville. And this fantastic record, Time and Evolution, there are songs that explore shame, vulnerability, and the complexity of being queer in a Southern religious community, which is really like, you know, Jesus Christ, man, Dallas, that's an intense town. We get into all that stuff and growing up and coming out and just being comfortable in your own skin. And as I said, Stephanie's a fantastic songwriter. She's got some singles out right now, like this record drops next week, but the singles Billboard Sign, Living and Dying, and Faithless are available now wherever it is you stream and download music. You'll be hearing one of those when I stop talking. I have not decided which one. Probably Billboard Sign, because that's the latest one. Stephanie and I have a great conversation about her journey as an artist and as a human being, and it's fantastic. She's really cool. I tried to get her to meet up with me and come out to the show, but she wasn't going to be in Dallas when we were there a couple of weeks ago. But hopefully I will meet her soon. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with this amazing songwriter, Stephanie Sammons. Let's get down.
I thought family was a house made of stone, until the wind blew away all I had known. I told the truth to be set free. It knocked the breath right out of me.
It is really nice to meet you. What a great record you've made with the great Mary Bragg.
Thank you. Yes, Mary. Gosh.
I feel like I've gotten to know who she is as an artist through a couple of records that she's made, yours and my friend Natalie Price and my friend love Grace Pettis.
Yeah, I love both of them. We have become friends.
That's great. So are you in Dallas right now?
Yes.
What part of Dallas are you in?
We live in a part of Dallas called, it's in Dallas County. It's called Farmers Branch.
Okay.
You heard of it?
Nope.
It's an up and coming community.
Yeah.
And Brookhaven Country Club's over here where Jordan Spieth came up, and it's kind of been a neglected community, but it's closer to the airport. It's right here in Dallas, and so everybody's kind of figuring that out and flocking over here.
Sorry to interrupt you. What's your it seems like your music community is in Nashville, but you're in Dallas. Are you part of a community there? Is there a group of people that are cool? Like, are you friends with Salim Nirala?
Don't know her.
No, he's a dude.
Oh, sorry. No.
It's all right.
I met a lot of singer-songwriters from Texas when I recently was invited to play in the Corpus Christi Songwriters Festival. And so I met a number of artists down there. I knew a couple of them. But, yeah, I've been going to Nashville for the last 7 or 8 years. And I've been doing these songwriting workshops, performing songwriter workshops there. With a gal named Lydia Hutchinson. She used to publish Performing Songwriter magazine.
Sorry, real quick. You've been putting them on?
No, I've been attending.
Oh, attending them. Okay.
And they're a small group. And I mean, I've been to like 30 of them over the last 7 years. Mary Gaucher, Emily Sellers from the Indigo Girls.
Okay.
Gretchen Peters, Beth Nielsen Chapman, Jonathan Brooks, Susie Boggess. So, I've gotten to know these women, you know.
Yeah. I think Jonathan's been on the show. Gaucher and I are friends. She's been on a couple of times. Yeah. I'm old friends with Jamie Harris.
Oh, yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah, yes. Now, I know together. Jamie as well.
Yeah. I figured you did.
Yeah, there. Mary.
You know one, you know the other.
Mary. Gaucher has been a significant mentor, friend, and has had a lot of influence on my songwriting. She was the first one that I attended back in 2017, I think, or 2016. God, that's been 8 years. Jeez. And I kind of built some roots in Nashville. And then through Mary Bragg, I've met many other Nashville artists who are in her community. She's a real community builder.
It seems like
and
that.
She's wonderful. And she kind of took me under her wing, and I've been to a few parties at her house, and we've become friends. And so I've met a lot of those artists. So I really try to spend a lot of time there as well. But I'm also trying to build my community in Dallas. I know a lot of people in Dallas, so we host house concerts from time to time, and we can get 70 to 80 people to a house concert who are just friends in the LGBTQ community here in Dallas.
Awesome.
But in terms of songwriters, the venues, the opportunities just to go out and play here are almost non-existent for singer-songwriters. It's really frustrating. So there are only a couple of venues that embrace original music and singer-songwriters in Dallas, and they're way on the south side.
Isn't
but
what was the place I used to play there?
Fort David's?
Yeah, I played there. Is that still going?
Yep, barely. It's still going.
But then, like, across the street or around the corner from it is Opening Bell.
Yes, and that's where I'm doing my album release show in June.
Yeah, that's a great place.
So Yeah, I'm so excited about it. They've been wonderful, and they're excited about it. So I think it's the perfect place to do that, and I'm looking forward to it.
Fantastic. Well, so you made this record with the great Mary Bragg producing in Nashville.
Yes.
And she has like a, like she put together the, like she did like old school producer, like you showed up, you had your songs and she brought in the people.
Yeah. She brought in the band. She brought in her crew. I love the engineer, Rachel Moore. She's, can I cuss?
Yes.
She's a badass.
That's it.
Yeah.
You can say that on NPR, man.
Okay, well,
I thought it was going to be like the C word or something. I was like, yeah, go.
Yeah, no. Who knows what could come out. But yeah, she brought in the players. Now, I brought in Berlin Thompson. He was featured on one of the songs. He played guitar. He sang harmony. And he's been one of those workshop artists that I've worked with. And we're friends. And so I wanted him to come in and play on something. And then Mary featured on a song. And then another gal, Ingrid Gardens, who ended up passing away soon after that, which was just a shock. But she's also on one. Yeah, thanks.
Well, yeah, as I said, this record's really great. You're a fantastic songwriter. I mean, I would put your records, like if I was making a playlist, I would put you on the same kind of playlist as Mary Gaucher. But I wouldn't be like... When I heard it, I wasn't like, "Oh, this chick's been listening to Gaucher." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's good.
I don't know really where it fits. You know, I
where
feel
you
like
fit?
It's more. Yeah, I feel like this record. I mean, I made a record in 2010 that's clearly country Americana. I made another EP in 2017, actually in Austin.
Oh yeah, with my pal John.
You know John?
Yeah, I know John. Actually, they advertised on the show.
Oh my God! I've known John for 20 plus years, and we used to work. He used to be literally a bedroom engineer on my songs.
Oh,
like
really?
He practiced on me before he ever had a studio or anything. We worked together years and years ago.
He's a sweet dude, man. A really talented guy too. And Kramsky, right?
Him.
Didn't Kramsky work on your thing?
Yeah.
He's fucking
he
amazing.
Did. I know. So yeah, I had a great band, great crew there. And that album was kind of, that EP, it was only five songs, had a lot of different types of songs on it. You know, you could say rock and roll, you could say Americana, country, maybe some folk. This one is really more folk leaning, but there's some steel pedal and stuff in the record. So it's Americana, folk, you know. I don't know where you'd put it, really. All those things.
I feel like, you know, I mean, outside of like the confines of radio, and you're not making mainstream music. You know, Gaucher's not making mainstream music. She's not trying to get on the radio like right after Lizzo. You know what I mean? So the thing is there's people that are seeking that. It's a different time now. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how old you are, but I'm 55 and I started doing this like when I was a kid. So the audience, like it's awesome and it's way worse. It's way better and it's way worse at the same time. Like certain aspects of it. Like now you can actually find out who's listening to your record where. How many people. You know what I mean in the world. Like shit like that. You could never really do. You could see where people were buying them from SoundScan, but you had to pay into some shit or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But now I feel like the walls have kind of come down and there's people that like now. If someone is into power pop or somebody is into folk music, in their world, they can listen to nothing but like from Fairport Convention or Joan Baez to Eliza Gilkison to you to Mary to I don't know, all people like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's weird. It is like that now. You just got to find the people and connect with them.
It is. You connect through other artists that you like.
Right.
That's how I discover new music, is through artists that I like. Yeah, I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you said your age. So I will say mine. This year is my double nickels year as well. Oh,
so you were the same age. Why do you look so much better than me?
It's probably the adjustments on the Zoom filters or whatever.
Oh, I need to get my Zoom filter game on.
You look good.
I'm far away from the thing, but thank you.
You look really good. Like, I wouldn't have said 55.
I wouldn't have said 55 to you either.
Well, thanks. That's good to hear.
Yeah. So you were born, 68?
69.
69. All right.
So the studio where we recorded in Nashville was Sound Emporium, and it was established in 1969. So I thought that was really cool. I didn't realize that. And when I walked in, I was like, oh yeah, this is the place.
Yeah. Is it a pretty, is it like a full on, like, legendary studio there? I don't know the name. It is.
It is. And it's really neat. And I recorded in Studio B, which is the smaller of the two. And Jason Isbell actually made a record in that same studio. And I think Robert Plant and Allison Krauss did some recording in that studio.
Yeah.
Recently, you know, before I came in. And so it had really, really great mojo.
Yeah. There's something about those classic places. Like, you don't think about it until you go there and you're like, oh, their energy is just slung all over the place here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, and they've got pictures all over the walls of everyone who's recorded there. It's a cool place.
There's a couple of feelings that overcome you when you walk into a place like that, when you haven't been into a place like that and you see those photos. Did you shrink, or did you go like, okay, I'm here. Okay. I'm like, put me in, coach. I'm ready to do it. Or were you like, I'm not That's fucking great. Allison Krauss. You know what I mean?
That's a great question. I would say, gosh, I had the gamut of emotions, when I was there. Yeah. I felt pretty good about it going in because I've also had experience recording at Ocean Way in Nashville.
Okay.
Big and fancy and famous and all of that.
Yes.
Through some of the workshops that I've done. We've done some studio recording. So I had that experience, and then prior, you know, making the two other EPs that I made. So I felt like this is great. You know, there's going to be good mojo. And then over the week of recording, I had my ups and downs of, Steph, you suck. You know, what are you doing here? And feeling that imposter syndrome. And then I also had some really good moments of feeling like I really nailed that vocal. Man, I love the direction Mary's taken on this song. It's going to be beautiful. But there were times when I did feel intimidated, especially trying to track. You know how you track with the band and you've got to play to a click track?
Yes.
Like, I've done click tracks with just me and my guitar, but so I just took the headphones off and I watched the drummer, and that's how I did it, because I could not do all of, lay down my, you know, my, what is it called? Rough mix or rough track. I struggled with that. And that really got me upset. Now, I didn't show my emotions, but I was just like really stressed about that. And finally got it figured out. But
let me ask you this. I remember when Grace Pettis did her record with Mary Bragg, that everyone involved with it. And to me, this was the first time I had ever heard of such a thing. And that is that everybody was either female or non-binary people, all working on everybody that played on the record, everyone that engineered the record. in that environment, walking into it as a woman, because, you know, there's always that sort of like, you know what I mean? Like the when the woman shows up with the guitar at the gig, they're like, oh, where's your boyfriend that's playing? Aren't you just carrying his guitar? Like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So, how, in a setting that Mary Bragg, I don't know her, but from what I understand, it is a different, a new mindset, a non male dominated culture. It's like the culture of just people working together. How different is that to you, as opposed to your other recordings? Now, I know you and John were friends, and I actually went and did something with him on a record. He was working with a friend of mine who's a woman. Anyway, but he didn't seem to have any handicap kind of going into that.
Yeah. Well, in my case, all of my musicians were dudes. John Estes was on bass. Josh Kaler was guitars. Jordan Pearlson was percussion, drums.
But more of what I'm saying is just kind of like the mindset and the tone that's set by Mary and the engineer as well, whose name I'm spacing out on.
Rachel Moore.
Right.
Yes, we did have. I did love having that all female team, the artist, the engineer, the producer. So is that more what you're talking about? Like,
yeah.
How is that different?
Yeah, early? Because normally, I mean, it's changing now for the better, but like, I can't remember. I talked to, I'm drawing a blank on her name. This huge engineer that worked on like Asia by Steely Dan and like was the first woman to ever engineer a platinum selling record, which by the way, didn't happen until the early 80s.
Wow.
But just how women have not been in charge in the technical realm and don't come up and at least in my generation and at least the one probably behind mine, there are not a lot of women producers, not a lot of women engineers, not a lot of women technician people out there. You don't take your guitar to a woman to fix it usually.
Right.
So that's basically what I was getting at is when you come in, is there a different tone to the session because of that?
Yes. You know, obviously Mary is a well-established, incredible singer-songwriter in her own right. And she brings that to the table. So she approaches production from the point of view of a songwriter.
Okay.
And that's a really cool thing. I've never had that experience before. That also was coupled with, she's incredibly thoughtful and careful and strategic about how she approaches the production of each song. And she also listens. She listened to me. She took all of my suggestions and feedback into account. When I wanted to add some finger picking to a song that was in a higher octave and lay that over something, she's like, I love it. Let's do it. So just, I also was more confident because I've done this a few times now and asking for what I wanted. And, it was just a wonderful working relationship. John and Charlie were great too. Just completely different though.
Sure.
You know, John and I are pals, but you know, we could let our hair down as three women. We could let our hair down and, you know, just, it was a different environment.
Yeah. That's what I was looking for. Yeah.
Yeah.
That it is noticeably different.
Yes. And I loved it. And yes, to be honest, it's always been a struggle being a gay person. And a woman, I mean, I've been in a male dominated industry my entire career of my other job, but
you're a financial planner in your other job.
Yes. And I worked for a company called Merrill Lynch for years, and it was really, really tough because I was always in the closet. You know, I'm 54, almost 55. So I've been through a lot of that old school shit that you go through. But when I do walk in and work with just a male team of your everyday, you know, white male heterosexual, whom I love, many of them, and many of them are wonderful friends of mine, and you will probably be as well. It's always in the back of my mind.
I've never heard it reversed like that. As if a lot of my friends are straight dudes.
I was trying to be like, you know,
I love it.
Articulated. Nope. But yeah, it's always been in the back of my mind. Like, do they know that I'm gay? It's just hard. It's just always been hard for me. It's wildly, I didn't even know Mary was with a woman. I mean, I didn't even know this about her. So that was very refreshing that, oh, it's one of my people and I can really relax. And it took that worry and stress off the table for me.
That's good. I want the rest of the world to feel like that for everyone.
Thank you.
I mean, I'm glad.
It's huge.
It's huge. It's fucking huge.
It is.
Yeah.
It is fucking huge.
And by the way, Lanice Bent is the name of that engineer.
It
finally
okay.
came to me. She's a legend.
Okay. Cool.
And I mean, imagine like, you know, in the 70s in the studio with, you know, bunch of 70s dudes on coke and like, you know what I mean, just like how horrible that must have been.
Oh yeah. My 2010 EP was like that. They knew about me. I've been with my now wife for 18 years, and so I wasn't in the closet with my music and any of those projects or endeavors, but it's still being worried about that and people not accepting you.
Yeah, that's fucking awful.
Thinking something about you behind your back and always being worried about what people think, which by the way, when I turned 50, I was like, I don't give a shit what anyone thinks anymore. Good. Thank goodness. But it has an impact on your performance.
Hell yeah, it does.
It has an impact on your authenticity.
Yes.
It's just so, so hard. And it, like I said, just, it's enormous to be able to feel comfortable.
So in this record, is this the first collection of songs that you put out? Because I know the other two are just EPs, but is this the first collection of songs that you are in that headspace of authenticity and like, I don't give a shit who thinks anything?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Good.
Funny, it still did come in. It still comes into the writing a little bit because I try to be, I have a song called Billboard Sign, which is really my coming out experience as a traditional Southern Baptist gal, the way I was raised and in that family. And then my parents, you know, and so I try to be very appropriate with how I put that song together. That would illustrate the agony of that time in my life and in my relationship with my parents, but not be cruel to them.
I know what you're saying.
There's
got to be a way for you to be able to be heard without them feeling the pain of, 55 years of shittiness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of things that were said and done and a lot of damage back in those days when we were pretty much, you know, not speaking to each other for a long time. But I did put one line in there that Daddy said, don't bother coming home. And I played the song for my parents and I was sweating. I was so worried and stressed about him hearing that line. And this is, Daddy said, don't bother coming home. And then there's some music, unless you plan to come alone. and it takes a minute for that tagline.
Right, yeah.
Unless you plan to come look. So he's listening, and he got very emotional, but he was like, when it said, Daddy said don't bother coming home, he goes, I didn't say that. And I said, just hold on, Dad. Hold on, Dad. And then it said, unless you plan to come alone. He was like, oh. So he did remember saying that. And but that was hard. That was hard playing that song for them.
Jesus. I can imagine. You got guts. Part of me feels like if we were doing this in person, I would hug you right now.
Oh, you're so sweet.
No, you deserve that.
Well, thanks. I mean, I think it does take courage. You know, my whole extended family is, my parents are great now. I mean, we've come a long way. But the whole entire extended family is very, very evangelical. And, you know, I feel like they all look down on me. And there are some songs, you know, putting out a song called Faithless, just on the surface, if you really don't get the song or right. dig into it, they're like, this is blasphemy, you know. So it's not even really about that kind of faith, but spiritual faith so much. But they didn't like the song. They didn't comment. They didn't, you know, and they do. They're all over social media. So I only had one cousin who reached out to me and said it was beautiful, and she understood. She understood the song. So that was nice. But I don't care. I really don't care because it's the truth, and it's my truth, and they can think whatever they want about me. I'm going to hell or whatever they think. I don't know what they think, but... So this album was really authentic, and it was really my truth. Instead of trying to write something commercial or anything like that, I really just wrote what I think and feel.
Yeah. And you did a great job. Do you feel like this is, do you feel like you're almost starting here as an artist?
Yeah, I do. I feel like this is my foundation.
Yeah.
This is the foundational piece of work that I will build upon
right.
going forward.
So you started putting out records kind of later than most people do. And you did you come to music? Like, where are you from? Like, where were you born?
I was born in Georgia, but immediately moved to Dallas, you know, as a young child. Maybe I was 3. And then I grew up in Plano, Texas, which is just north of Dallas.
Yeah.
5A state champs 2 years in a row. Football. When I was in high school.
Isn't Plano the place that's had all the school board things?
Probably. Plano's had a lot of crazy stuff over the years.
Yeah.
Really has.
Yeah.
And
luckily
I survived.
You got out of there pretty fast.
I survived unscathed, pretty much, but many people didn't. But yeah, that's where I grew up, and I forget what you were going with that.
What I was going with that is sort of like finding your relationship to music. Like as a kid, like what was your relationship? Were you not allowed to listen to some stuff? Like was Ozzy banned in your house or?
Oh yeah. My dad threw away my Go Go's album because it had naked ladies with towels.
Dude, I'm friends with them, and my friend Jane Wheedlin.
Oh
my friend Jane Wheedlin loves blasphemy, like loves it. She puts out one post a week of like 10 blasphemous posts together in one post and on Instagram. But I'm gonna tell her that's amazing, just because they were in towels. You know what you should tell your mom? That you know why they were in towels? It was a new band putting out their first record, and the art director, they couldn't afford shit for them to wear, so they went and got towels at Macy's that they actually returned so they could get the money back because they couldn't even afford the actual towels they used.
That's an incredible story. Wow.
Amazing. So there's some, did you, like, how were you being exposed to this music you weren't supposed to be listening to? Through friends that parents were a little lenient?
Well, I grew up in the church and I sang in the choir. And so all of those hymns were ingrained in my brain. I did have some albums like Sean Cassidy and Casey and the Sunshine Band. And I'm trying to remember, but they pretty much let go of all that. Once I was driving, I was listening to Van Halen, Boston, Triumph.
Yes.
All rock and roll bands. And so that, I mean, I had more CDs than any of my friends, and I still have thousands of them. I need to figure out what to do with them. So I had plenty of exposure to music later in life, all the different genres that I loved and artists that I listened to. The Eagles was the one that I really loved.
When you were listening to this music, were you connecting with it on a level of like, oh wait, maybe I can be a part of this in some way, or no? You were just a fan.
No, I was just a fan. I didn't start fooling around with a guitar really seriously until I was in college. I bought an acoustic guitar on a credit card, and
why?
I got in trouble for that. But huh?
What made you go?
The Indigo Girls.
Okay.
The Indigo Girls came out. I heard Closer to Fine when I was a freshman in college, and that was pretty much when I was like, oh, I think I'm gay, because I put two and two together. And that inspired me to learn how to play guitar. I had a little bit of – a friend had loaned me or had me hang on to his electric guitar when he was going out of town, when I was in like the eighth grade, and I was – he taught me an Ozzy Osbourne riff.
Crazy.
And so I learned how to play that, and my parents made me give it back. So, but then I got a guitar again in college, and me and a good friend in college, we tried to play, learn some of the Indigo Girls songs, Bonnie Raitt, and we would play at this teeny tiny bar in Wichita Falls, Texas, and we were horrible. I was not a good singer. I had no confidence in my voice. That is what stopped me for so many years from pursuing it. It really did. I had a choir teacher at the church when I tried out for a part. I wanted so bad to be one of the people who could play the big parts and sing. And she was like, you sing too quiet. Try again. And I'm in front of the whole choir, and I just shrunk and became very intimidated. And then I couldn't sing loud. And then I could sing on tune. Which she was like, I'm sorry, no, and dismissed me. And that really was instrumental in my confidence as a singer. And so I just was like, I suck. I can't sing. And that held me back for many years until I started experimenting again. With John Neese, in the early 2000s, and another guy, what was his name? Scott Baxendale from Denver. He built guitars for the drive-by truckers, including Jason Isbell back in the day in the early 2000s. And he was just getting into doing some recording and producing. And I did a couple of songs with him, and that's how I started getting into it again, with John Neese and Scott Baxendale.
So
being there again,
yeah, where they're learning to record. You know what? It was, I met John going in and singing on a Kathy Valentine song that she and I wrote together that he recorded.
Okay.
So the Go-Go's comes full circle.
Wow.
Full circle.
Crazy.
The question I have is when you were in high school, then, like, what was your dream? What did you see your life like? Because it all changes once this comes into it. It just fucks everything up. It's like when old white dudes discover golf or something. You know what I mean? Like, everything goes out the window. You don't have a family anymore. You don't give a shit about anything. Like, you just got to play.
Yeah. I mean, I always wanted to be a rock star. That was always in me. I also played basketball competitively as a point guard. I'm only 5'3", 5'4". And I played basketball in college. So that was my big dream. I wanted to play Division I basketball. And I did. I walked on at University of Oklahoma as a freshman, and I played there.
Wow.
And then I transferred to a school, Midwestern State University, which is Division II, and that's where I finished my basketball career. So music, and then my dad is an entrepreneur, great businessman, and he really encouraged me to get a business degree. It was just never a known opportunity to me that I could pursue a career in music. So it just never even really entered my mind, but I still had that desire of, well, I could do this. I can just play for fun. And it wasn't until my first Mary Gaucher workshop, honestly, and I had already put out one EP, that she gave me permission to call myself a songwriter. And that started the journey of really, okay, I really want to be good. I want to be as good at this as I was at basketball. I really want to be the best. Not to compete with anybody else, but to be my best self. And I've just been on this journey to just keep learning and keep working my ass off and keep trying to improve and write great songs. That's what really drives me.
Yeah. Do you have any interest in writing for other people?
I do. You know, if that door were to open, I would probably walk through it and see where it would lead. I haven't. Mary Gaucher has also helped me with writing from the point of view that is best for the song, that serves the song the most. And so some of the new songs I'm writing are not autobiographical because they're so much more powerful in the first person. And so I write them in the first person, even though it's not about me.
Right.
I was a bystander. I was, you know, but yeah, I do have that interest.
Yeah. Do you collaborate and write with others at all?
Nope. And that's another thing I'm interested in that I would like to, walk into. And that's part of building the network and the community in Nashville and why I'm spending so much time there, because I want to start practicing that co-writing.
Do you have a place there?
No, not yet, but I'm looking.
Oh, look at you.
I'll probably just rent something. I mean, it's so outrageously expensive there right now. But no, I have a lot of hotel points, and so I'm able to go there quite a bit without breaking the bank. And so I do whenever I can.
There were times that I went there, like, I don't know, 15 years ago or something. And I played with this one band, and they had some friends there that we would just kind of stay at this huge fucking house and in East Nashville. And it was such a great scene there. Like, I'd stay there for a couple of days and just, like, hanging out. There's cool coffee shops. It seems like whatever was happening in East Nashville then was, like, the place I would want to live. It's kind of Austin-y.
Exactly. It's so much like Austin. Yeah, I really love that area, too.
There's something great about the industry there that gives it, like, this sort of, like, L.A. sheen where you can go there with, like on the flight there or whatever. You got all this confidence to, like, oh, I'm going to be able to do this. And you get there and people just look through you because you're not somebody who's made somebody else a lot of money yet or something. And
yeah,
and it shrinks you to this level where, like, I don't know. I never wanted to live. My sort of, like, songwriting thing happened in Los Angeles instead of, like, Nashville because I'm more of a rock guy. But there, I was in that sort of, like, my manager would drive me and just drop me off at somebody's house at 10 in the morning and come back and pick me up at 1. Hopefully I had a song written and hopefully, like, you know what I mean? Like, just this real weird kind of, like, freaky kind of thing that can either, I remember a couple of times I felt super empowered, and then a couple of times I felt like I needed to come home and become like a janitor at a junior high or something.
I understand that. I do. I usually feel pretty good when I'm there. But taking this, trying to take my music to the next level and seeing where, you know, I do feel like I'm way down here, and everyone that I aspire to be like, they're way up there, and I've got a long way to go.
Yeah.
But that's okay. Since I've been introduced to this community, they're very gracious and kind, and I feel fortunate that Mary Bragg has kind of pulled me up into this community, because it's nice now to have other singer-songwriter friends there who are all, you know, who have been doing this a lot longer than I have on the public stage. But, gosh, they're so kind and supportive. People like Grace and Natalie and those types. They've been wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. I really loved Grace's record a lot, but I spent a lot of time with Natalie a few years ago. I worked with this nonprofit here called the Austin Music Foundation, and we picked a few artists, and we would kind of like spend 6 months helping them out with everything from like songs to like the end of it, you would go record two songs, and I got to play on a bunch of stuff with her, and it was really fun.
Cool.
Yeah.
She's super talented.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's super talented and a really solid person.
Yeah.
Really good person.
And a real go-getter.
A real what?
Go-getter.
Yeah, she is a real go-getter. She is. Yeah. In a good way, because sometimes that can be fucking annoying too. It can be.
Yeah. Another difference with me is I've been in another career all these years. And so I'm, in a way, I feel like I have to be a rule breaker, because there are all these norms that, well, you can't, I guess more and more people are doing other things, right? Because it's very hard to make a living being a performing singer-songwriter anymore. So I'm coming at it from, you know, I've got a pretty good gig with my day job. I control my hours. I control how many people I work with in terms of my clientele and everything. So it's very, it lends itself to giving me a lot of time.
It's fantastic.
And capacity to focus. I do feel like I'm doing two full-time careers now, but they really take up the time of one full-time career, you know, combined, I would say. So I don't know if the others look, frown upon that, that, oh, well, she's not full-time because she has another job, but what? Who cares?
No, dude.
I mean, why can't I be successful at this? Regardless.
Even Kelly Clarkson has a fucking day job. Like, she, you know what I mean? Like, all those people that are on those, you know what I'm saying? Like, everybody has to do something like that.
Yeah, many artists have makeup lines and clothing lines. And
there was a thing I read.
Business endeavors.
I read a thing that was probably like 10 years ago, and it was an interview with 50 Cent saying that he wasn't really concerned with putting out music. And when they asked why, he said, music makes up 5% of my income and bottled water makes up 95%. So
I hate that that's the way it is right now. I mean, every day I wake up as a business person going, God, there's gotta be a way to, gotta be a way to fix this, but I haven't come up with it yet.
I mean, look at Gaucher. Like, I mean, here's this incredibly successful songwriter. I mean, she teaches those classes too. Like, that's also not, I mean, you know, like in the 70s, like if you were Janice-ian, that's all you had to do was just go around town fucking being Janice-ian.
Yeah.
Put out a record every year, go on tour and smoke weed and have a boat or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And Gaucher she's an entrepreneur. She is a good businesswoman. And always has something going and always takes advantage of the opportunities to showcase her merchandise and figure out how to monetize what she's doing in the music business. And I think she's really somebody to learn from in that area.
Yeah. So, are you going on the road or anything when this record comes out?
I'm trying to figure that out. You know, it's the, is it the chicken or the egg thing?
Right.
Because you got to be able to draw a crowd. I can draw a crowd in Dallas. I can draw about 10 people in Nashville, you know? So that's it. But Nashville is different. Nashville is more of bringing your community in and playing for them. It's completely different.
It's time to get fans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I did play in that Music Songwriters Festival. I'm trying to play in a few more of those. I really love that idea of hitting 5 or 6 festivals a year. Of course, they're really tough to get into. But that's my goal. And then, yeah, I'd love to tour. I'd love to take some time and maybe I'll do a Texas tour. Maybe I will try to go on the road with someone else, you know, kind of do a dual thing. I need to figure that out. I would like to do it, but I've got to figure out how to do that strategically. And, you know, when I probably don't have fans in, I don't know, name the place, Duluth, Minnesota or something.
Right,
so
right. Yeah, it's just something you build.
My bank,
yeah.
Which is what I'm trying to do.
Yeah. Well, it all starts with making a great record, and you did that. You have great songs. This record's fantastic. You should be really proud of it.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I am very proud of it. I really am.
Yeah.
You know, but very happy with how everything turned out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. We should stay in touch. I'd love to know when you come to Austin. I'll definitely come and see you.
That would be great. Yeah. I would love to come to Austin. It's on my radar, and, figuring out opportunities there. That would be fun. It's one of my favorite towns.
Oh, I'm playing up there next Friday.
What? Where?
At, what is the place now that people play? I haven't been there in so long. Granada Theater.
You are?
I'm in this band called Skyrocket that plays super hits of the 70s and 80s. And we're playing the show at Granada Theater next Friday. Yeah, I'll send you a thing on Instagram.
Shoot, man. I leave for on the 9th. I'm gone all next week to Nashville for a workshop with Kim Ritchie.
You're gonna miss, oh, she's amazing. Doesn't she live here?
Or no, she lives in Nashville.
Okay, but she did live here.
Maybe.
I feel like
I
she
know.
Did like a while back. I feel like she was around. Like I just missed her when I'd go places. Maybe she was just hanging out here.
I don't know. She may have lived there. She's great. But shoot, I hate that I'll miss you because I sure would have come to that.
That's all right. When we come back up, we'll do it. When you come down here, I'll come see you. But I really enjoyed talking to you. I kind of figured you were going to be this cool, but I didn't realize you were going to be actually super cool.
Oh,
like,
you're
I wish
sweet.
You lived
well,
here. I would totally hang out with you all the time.
Same.
Yeah.
Totally.
All right.
Make
well,
it happen.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll get to meet in person soon and have fun in Nashville at the Kim Ritchie Songwriting Retreat. And
thank
congratulations.
You.
This album, Time and Evolution, comes out on May 3rd, produced by Mary Bragg. Yeah. This is your first full-length record. Be available. Are you putting it out on a physical form or no?
Yeah, we've got CDs done, working on vinyl now.
Oh, yeah.
Vinyl takes a little bit longer, and I was kind of late to the game on that, but yes. Gonna have all that.
All right. Well, it's been great talking to you, Stephanie. And I'll tell Wendy I had a great time talking to you. I love Wendy too, by the way. Your publicist.
I love her.
She's fantastic.
I knew as soon as I talked to her, I was like, I love her. I want to work with her.
Yeah.
Okay. Give her, or can she send me your contact info so we can stay in touch? Okay.
That will happen.
Okay, cool.
Really nice meeting you. Great having you on the show, and congratulations on such a great record.
Thank you so much, Johnny. It was
fun. Bye.
All right. Yes, bye.
Mama said she'll never understand. I still
guys, that was Stephanie Sammons, her album Time and Evolution drops next week, May 3rd, produced by Mary Bragg in the great studios of Nashville, Tennessee. You can get it also on CD and vinyl. Go to StephanieSammons.com for all of your Stephanie Sammons needs. It was really great talking to her, man. She's a very, very cool person. And I really, really like this album. I hope you do too. All right. Don't forget, gang, when you're out there checking out StephanieSammons.com, you can subscribe to this podcast wherever it is that you find podcasts, be it Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Overcast, new shows every Tuesday and every Thursday. In fact, for the next couple of weeks, we're going to be releasing 3 shows a week. And I've got a couple big ones coming up. I do. I have a couple big ones. I'm not going to say who it is, but they're going to be, you're going to be like, what? So, yeah, all I got to say is everybody have fun tonight. You know what I mean? Everybody have fun tonight. All right, gang, get out there and check out Stephanie Sammons' album Time and Evolution when it drops next week on May 3rd. Go to StephanieSammons.com for all of your Stephanie Sammons needs. Have a great weekend, whatever you're doing. I love you. Let's get down.
It says Jesus saves right there in black and white. Does it really matter who is right? I spent my youth sitting in the front church pew to hear a Southern Baptist preacher's great good news. The last I heard, he'd fallen from grace. The affairs and alcohol became his faith. There I was, praying for my salvation, a castaway from my abominations. Even though I've always been the same, the color of my eyes will never change. I keep driving by that billboard sign on I-75. It says Jesus saves right there in black and white. Does it really matter who is right? Thank God for the morning dove. Blood isn't always thicker than love. I thank God for time and evolution, for a softened heart of resolution.